Well, hey there, this is Danny Sunshine Bauer, host of this podcast, and my mission in life is to help school leaders fight isolation and frustration via a leadership community in order to gain clarity and find solutions to their greatest challenges. If you get value from today's show, you can show some love back by subscribing to this podcast and leaving a rating and review where you're listening right now. I could serve more school leaders by having a better ranking, which is tied 100% to subscriptions, reviews, and shares on social media. In today's show, I talk with Dr. John Ewing, and we explore a number of interesting topics like how teachers choose their professional development plan through Math for America, how to change what teaching feels like and how it's perceived, and some steps school leaders can take to adopt the Math for America model. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. And before we jump into the episode, let's take some time to thank our show sponsors. A lot of school leaders talk about improving student soft skills to help them succeed in their rigorous coursework. The problem is that most leaders just talk about it without actually doing anything. You can improve your students' non-cognitive skills today by checking out an amazing program called Organized Binder. Learn more at organizedbinder.com. Students who participate in the Conrad Challenge don't learn to think outside the box. There is no box. Learn how innovation takes off and soars beyond the confines of a box at conradchallenge.org.
I'm Steve Mileto from Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Make sure you check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. And get ready, because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Oh, hey there, better leaders. I am joined today with Dr. John Ewing. And John Ewing joined Math for America in early 2009 as president. Before joining Math for America, Ewing served as executive director of the American Mathematical Society for nearly 14 years. With a staff of over 200 employees and 4 offices and over 32,000 members, the AMS is a major publisher of mathematics research and the largest mathematics research society in the world. John Ewing previously was a professor of math at Indiana University and has held visiting positions in the mathematics at Dartmouth College, University of Virginia, Newcastle University, and Göttingen University, which I'm sure I messed up. We can hear the pronunciation a little bit later. In addition to his research, Ewing has been active in mathematical exposition, both as writer and editor, winning several national awards. In recent years, he has also written extensively on scholarly and electronic publishing. Welcome to the show, Dr. Ewing.
Thanks very much. That makes me sound very stuffy, but anyway, I'm not quite that stuffy here. So
that's okay. We'll drop the doctor then for the rest of the episode. And how did I do on the pronunciation of that last university? I'm sure I butchered it.
Nobody can pronounce Göttingen.
But Göttingen. Okay, doing a little bit better, but very interesting. Great. Well, John, can you describe a perfect day at work?
Let's see. A perfect day at work is when everybody is getting along, working together, challenging one another. And when I sort of feel that we are accomplishing what we set out to do for that day and week and month. And Math for America, there's a kind of routine where we keep going through a schedule throughout the whole year. And when you keep up with that schedule, it makes you feel pretty good.
Can you unpack the schedule a bit for us? You know, our listeners really are interested in schedules and structure and routines and rituals that people have, a successful day. So what does that look like?
Yeah, so let's see. I have to explain a little bit about Math for America. So I'll give you the from the top down here. Math for America is a fellowship program. Has to do with math and science teachers. Don't be fooled by the Math for America. It's science as well. And we offer that. It's a 4-year fellowship to highly accomplished math and science teachers. The program I'm talking about today is here in New York City. So we have an application, a competitive application. We recruit heavily to try to get teachers to know that this application exists and to sort of reach every school we can. You know, there are about 1,700 schools in the city of New York, so there are a lot to reach. we ask them to fill out that application. There's a deadline. We read those hundreds of applications that come in every single year. We then decide the ones we're going to interview, and we interview those in a day-long interview. So the selection process runs over months, and that's a big part of the schedule, trying to work through that to try to choose the best people we can for this fellowship. Once they are admitted to the fellowship, they come into the program. They join a professional community that serves a lot of functions. It's just a community in which these highly accomplished teachers can talk to one another. Math teachers talking to science teachers, middle school teachers talking to high school teachers, physics talking to biology, elite schools talking to teachers from high need schools. But they also take workshops and give workshops. So here's what's characteristic about that community. The teachers, first of all, get to choose what it is they want to attend, which workshops they want to go to. They are in control. We're not fixing anybody. They get to choose whatever it is they want to take. Most of the workshops, more than half, almost two-thirds, are created and taught by the teachers themselves. So this is really teacher-driven stuff. These are really smart people. The workshops, by the way, are on content. They could be on math or science. They could be on pedagogy, on policy, on almost anything you think teachers want to talk about. They run about 2 hours each, and they're just exciting. They're, you know, it's like a mini university. We run every year, we put out a catalog, and we run over 400 courses, but courses are multiple workshops strung together. There are over 900 different workshops that we put on in a given year. There are now in the program here in New York City over 1,000 teachers. So these 1,000 teachers are constantly coming in and talking and interacting with one another. And you can imagine putting together the catalog, running those workshops, keeping everything on schedule. That's the kind of routine that we have as we go through the whole year. In addition to all of this, and I always put this last for a reason, we pay the fellowship includes a $15,000 stipend every year for the teachers. So of course the $15,000 is great. So it's money. It rewards them for all the work they do in the community. It's also just it's a kind of reward for being who they are, great, great teachers. But the community is the part that I think really makes this program work. And running that community, first selecting the teachers and then running the community, that's the work of Math for America. And it kind of runs over a yearly cycle every single year.
Yeah, it seems like it's a highly selective process, to say the least. You're really trying to get the cream of the crop to join the program. Maybe you could talk a bit about that selection process. I think there might be some ideas and principles that the listeners can take and apply to their own hiring process, looking for teachers for their local school.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure about that, but there may be a few elements that probably people would find in common with hiring in general. Of course, the application, we ask for a lot of information from people, both about their teaching and their career, but also about their content background. So we ask people to submit transcripts. They take a little praxis exam to test content. We look for letters of recommendation from people who know the teacher well. We ask for a lesson study statement. So we ask for a lot of information to do the initial screening. I will say that for us, content is really important. It's not the only thing. You can know a subject really well and not be able to teach it very well. Anybody that's gone to college certainly knows that. But content is really important. If you don't know the content, if you don't feel comfortable with it and feel excited about it, then it's pretty hard to convey a sense of excitement about it to the students that you're teaching. So we look for that. Even more so in the interview process, we try to look for many of those same things. So the interview is shorthand for a day-long event in which the teachers come together. We put them together in small groups of five or six, and they each present to one another a little 10-minute clip of something, either math or science, whatever it is their field is. So they present that, and they're, it's not supposed to be a lesson. It's supposed to be just talking about some piece of math or science that's exciting to them, and maybe that they think would be exciting to other people. Then we have them sit and talk to one another about the what they just heard, all of those talks. And they'll ask questions. Almost always we sort of say, well, what if you had a chance to do it over again, what would you have said differently to make it sound better to people? But it's amazing what you can learn when you see people have a conversation like that together about presentations that they just heard. One of the things we're looking for when we're seeking these people is not only people that know the subject really well, are excited about it, that know the craft of teaching well, but that know how to work together as a group, as teachers, so that these are people that sort of have both the temperament and the tools to grow professionally. They know how to work together and to sort of get better at their craft and get better at the subject that they're talking about.
Sure.
And you see that when they're working together better than at any other time. And finally, we also do interview them one-on-one. The people that watch them in those groups in the morning, always a scientist or mathematician and an educator and somebody that knows Math for America well, those same people then interview them later in the day and probe about things. By the time you're done with that process, both the application and the interview, you know these people extremely well. And you have a pretty good sense of what they're like in the classroom. Even if you haven't seen them in the classroom, you get a really good sense of them. And then we make tough decisions and choose the people that come into the program. But it means that we have people in the program that we feel will thrive in this environment, in this community of teachers.
And this idea of teamwork, how do you test for that? Or what are the look fors and how do you evaluate that in the process if that's an important part of what you do?
Yeah, I hate to say this because this is so trite, but you know it when you see it. I should say first that you know it when you don't see it. So if somebody tries to dominate the conversation, for example, in that group work, that's a pretty good clue that there's something not too good there. Or if somebody just somehow doesn't seem to have understood at all what people were trying to say, or then that's another tip off. But generally, you'll see teachers, especially because we interview people already who are pretty good at what they do. You just see people being naturally curious about what the others had presented, asking really good questions about it that are both perceptive and genuine. I mean, questions where people really were interested in finding out more about what was going on. And you also see it when people just in subtle ways compliment one another or support one another if they're struggling. You know, somebody starts to answer a question that one person has asked and struggles a little bit, somebody else will pitch in politely, mm-hmm. pitch in and say, you know, well, maybe this is what you were going to say. It's pretty easy to recognize when you see people that are genuinely and smoothly working together in that kind of a setting.
And I like the idea that you know it when you don't see it as well. I think non-examples are a powerful way of defining what it is that you want or don't want. I know when years ago, teaching language arts, sixth graders, and you're introducing new vocabulary terms, and a powerful strategy that we would use was say, this is what the word does not mean, so you don't confuse it.
Yes.
So I think that's a really great point that you bring out there. Can you talk a bit more about the Math for America model and how it works with teachers?
Yeah. So there's this fellowship. By the way, it's a renewable fellowship as well, but let me say something about that later. But so it brings these teachers in, that they get this $15,000 a year. They're in this community with all of these opportunities for professional growth, to work together, to get engaged in both the community and by the way, to carry what they do at Math for America outside back to their schools. Those are all important. People will then say, well, you know, why are you doing this? In fact, for a while, people would always ask me, why do you do something like this for the best teachers that you can find? because that's unusual in education, right? Almost always, most education reform is focused on what doesn't work. They're focused on the schools that are failing or the kids that can't get something, or in particular on the teachers that are struggling somehow. And Math for America is exactly the opposite. We try to focus on the things that are working really well, on teachers who already are really accomplished. The reason we do that is that, first, we'd like to keep those really accomplished teachers teaching longer. As you probably know, I mean, attrition is a huge problem in the education workforce in this country. And we're losing teachers at a remarkable rate. And people can argue about exactly what that rate is, but, you know, it's somewhere between 8 and 10% a year. We're losing the workforce, often early in their careers, or very often just after teachers get really good at what they're doing. So in years, they struggle for the first few years. Almost all teachers do, and then they kind of get better at the job. And then in years 5, 6, or 7, they begin to burn out. They just get tired of what's a really tough job. And the attrition takes away the best experienced teachers that we can find. So number one, we want to make teaching feel more exciting to these people. And if they're teaching math or science especially, make sure that they still feel connected to math and science. Make sure that they feel like they are mathematicians and scientists, in the same way that university faculty feel that they're mathematicians and scientists. That's not a stretch. These are people that know mathematics and science so well that they should be called mathematicians and scientists, and they should feel that. So keeping those people in the classroom longer by making teaching more exciting is the most important thing I think we do. On the other hand, while we don't set out to fix them in any way, because they don't need to be fixed, we want to provide them with opportunities to grow professionally, and they do. I mean, partly because we choose people that want to grow professionally. So we offer them all of these opportunities, all the workshops, opportunities to keep up with the subject that they teach, opportunities to talk with other people about hard problems in pedagogy, problems in equity. You can imagine in the city of New York, there are lots of things. We have professional learning teams that talk about English language, the problems of teaching English language learners, or anything that you can imagine in almost any kind of school setting. And finally, the third thing, besides keeping them there and giving them opportunities to grow, is we're trying to change what teaching feels like. I mean, I guess this is cultural change in some sense, but Math for America sets out to try to change the way people in general, both the public and the teachers themselves, think about the teaching profession, to make it more exciting, to make it more prestigious, for sure, and more attractive, so that the best young people that we can find will be interested in taking on teaching as a career. And that cultural change is maybe as important as anything else we do.
Yeah, it's interesting in terms of making it more exciting, and you talk about the prestige, I guess, how educators are seen. If you're trying to do that with the younger people, are you talking about novice teachers there, or even their students?
Actually, I'm talking about their students as much as anybody. I think, you know, right now, I think if you're a talented student in high school or talented undergraduate, and I just think it's hard to think about teaching as a career right now.
Sure.
People do. I mean, that's the amazing thing, is we've got these fantastic people who've chosen teaching as a career, but we need more of them. You know, I taught, as my little bio said before, I taught mathematics in a major university for many, many years. And then I was at the American Mathematical Society. I knew lots of people that were in math departments around the country, or chairs of math departments around the country. After I came to Math for America in the first few years, I tried an experiment. I went back to my colleagues in math departments and I said, you know, if you had an undergraduate math major who was really one of the top one or two people in the department in a given year, and they came to you and they said, you know, I'm thinking after graduation that I'm gonna try teaching for a while. What would you say to them? And to a person, they all said,
they would say, "Are you crazy?" what would they say?
That they would not encourage them to take on to become a teacher. They tell them go to graduate school or go get a job at some aerospace company or. And you know, as long as we're discouraging the best people from becoming teachers, we're never going to make things better. Mm-hmm. We have to change the way people think about teaching. And I think we can make teaching into a career that feels more prestigious, that is more prestigious, and that's more exciting. That's, you know, if you're really good at math or science, that it's a career where you feel you can continue to be interested in math and science and excited about it, and that you can convey that to kids. There's no better feeling in the world than being successful at conveying the excitement of your subject to some senior in high school that's just starting out in life.
Hmm. These are some interesting points. Let's pause here for a message from our sponsors. Today's show is proudly sponsored by Organized Binder, a program which gives students daily exposure to goal setting, reflective learning, time and task management, study strategies, organization skills, and more. Organized Binder's color-coded system is implemented by the teacher through parallel process with students, helping them create a predictable and dependable classroom routine. You can learn more and improve your students' executive functioning and non-cognitive skills at organizedbinder.com. All right, we're back with Dr. John Ewing from Math for America, and we're talking about how to change what teaching feels like and how it's perceived and the Math for America program and the community that it produces. So, John, I'm curious, what ways does Math for America engage with school leaders? You know that school leaders are a big component of the listeners of this show. So how do you work with them?
Yeah. Let's see. It's pretty natural. I mean, we have teachers. We have those 1,000 teachers are spread out in about 400 different schools here in New York City. We engage in with the principals of those teachers on a regular basis, some more than others. Some, I mean, even though they're spread out over all of those schools, there are a few schools that have maybe 5 or 6 or even as many as 10 or 15 teachers in the school. Those principals, I think, see firsthand what the benefit is of having people that are engaged in a community like this coming back to their schools and trying to bring with them the kind of excitement that they feel here in Math for America. For example, we have one format of workshops is called a professional learning team. This is not a new idea. It's, you know, a small group of people, 15 to 20. There's a certain format for it. It's always co-led by a couple teachers. The format encourages everybody in this group to be part of the conversation in every single workshop. And it's pretty effective. Teachers, our teachers, can go back to their schools and carry that format with them and start their own little professional learning teams in their own schools with non-Math for America teachers. There's nothing magic about being a Math for America teacher. Of course, the $15,000 a year helps. But just being professionally together and professionally active like that makes a big difference. And we've had principals come back to us and just tell us that they can see that it's sort of changed the department just by seeding these ideas and that kind of excitement into the rest of the department, that it can change what goes on in the department. So the principals have been partners with us in that sense, that I think they see what it is we do. They've been enormously helpful in many instances in helping us to identify how this changes the culture in their schools. And I think in the future, our plan is to try to figure out how to more systematically mine that information, because I think that's a great resource for us to be able to get the feedback from the principals. Finally, of course, because our aim is to try to keep the very best teachers teaching longer, I think principals almost always understand immediately what the great benefit is in trying to do that. that retention is really important, especially for the best teachers.
I'm wondering, do you have a success story of a school that, you know, maybe it's the caterpillar to the butterfly, but some type of school transformation that you saw as a result of a Math for America teacher acting as a catalyst for school change?
Yeah. So the answer is yes. I know of a great school where there are Math for America teachers and where they have done unbelievable things. So a school in the South Bronx called Fannie Lou Hamer, which teaches kids who are all high needs and it's not an easy neighborhood, although it's turned into a spectacular school. But the teachers there, in various ways, have really dramatically changed the whole environment of the school. In science, for example, they bring in, they've sort of went out and bought some old used equipment and created labs and have the kids doing real science and creating posters and going to science fairs and science mm-hmm. meetings. I mean, serious scientific meetings. And presenting at these meetings, these kids who otherwise never would have done anything like this get out and feel themselves as if they're really part of the scientific community. It's exciting. It's incredible, frankly. Having said all of that, I can't tell you that it's Math for America that did that. I can only tell you that Math for America teachers have been part of this process and that they are really talented, and it shows. And it's sort of obvious. I should add, by the way, that, you know, because I said before, these things are renewable. So this is a 4-year fellowship. People can renew, but renewing is a little bit different. It's again a 4-year fellowship after that. But you have to be more engaged in order to get new. And you have to have some ideas for how you will become more engaged in the future, either in the Math for America community itself, or in your own school, or in some other way that you're sort of taking your involvement here and moving it outside beyond yourself. And in that sense, the more senior master teachers, the ones that have already been through one or sometimes two or sometimes three fellowships, become real ambassadors for these ideas of the program and kind of bring it outside to the rest of the world. Our aim in all of this is to try to take these ideas and spread them around the country. One way to do that would be to create other programs, or to help people create other programs that are exactly like ours. And New York State did that. So New York State, a few years ago, the governor heard about the program, decided that this was a great idea for New York State, and put public money into building a program, which we worked with from the beginning and still work with now, that's around the rest of the state, not New York City, but the rest of the state. The rest of the state is about as big as New York City in terms of population. And their program is now almost 1,000 teachers as well. But it's outside of New York City, funded purely by public money at 9 different sites around the state. Same principle, same idea. And it's been a real success. I mean, it's really changed things in the state of New York. And we're working with other states trying to get them to buy into this same kind of idea, which means focusing on excellence, finding really great teachers, bringing them together in a community, doing something similar. Maybe not always exactly the same, but similar in various ways. And Los Angeles has a program that's grown up, again, with our help and support, which does something very similar in Los Angeles, only quite a bit smaller. It's about a little under 100 teachers.
Wonderful. Well, it sounds like the impact is definitely there, and you know, you're spreading the great ideas around the country, and appreciate your generosity in that sense. And John, this is our listeners' favorite question, so I cannot wait to hear how you answer it. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by any resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top 3 priorities?
You've promised me all the resources that I need.
Yeah. Use your imaginations. Anything you want.
Yeah. Let's see. I would begin by choosing the best teachers I could find and make sure that they were spread around in many different subjects. I am a great believer in liberal arts education. So I think you want people that know history, you want people that know philosophy, math and science, of course, but equally, I want to have great teachers in art and music, and I want to make sure that the school focuses on the liberal arts in the best sense of the word or the phrase liberal arts. I would try to choose very carefully administrators who could guide the whole process with a light touch, who were not too heavy-handed, and who understood what it means to create an environment in which curiosity becomes natural for everybody, and where students at least have a chance of feeling inspired about what it is that they're learning. And finally, and maybe this is the most important thing, I try to set that all in motion by encouraging those leaders of the teachers to respect and, most importantly, trust the teachers.
Yes.
To do what they need to do in the right way. Respect and trust is really the thing that's been missing from education for so long. And I think that should be the guiding principle of any school that's really terrific. And I guess I put a finally, that I then have what we're missing most in education today. I'd have patience enough to let this whole process run for a few years, 5 or 6 or 7 years.
Right.
We start things and then expect them to be a success in 2 years. And that's not the way education works. It takes time in education. So you need patience as well as respect and trust.
Well, John, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Please tell us the best way to connect. And if school leaders were interested in adopting the Math for America fellowship model, what are some steps they can take?
Yeah, let's see. So the best way to connect with us is our website, www.mathforamerica.org, which is easily available and has all the right links on it. Starting a Math for America program is not so easy. At first, if you're going to give substantial stipends, you have to have substantial money behind it. It's complicated. We have some information on the website about what to do, but I think our feeling at the moment is the best way to start programs is on a large scale, a larger scale. Just in one school probably isn't enough because you need the kind of critical mass. So we're hoping to do it state by state. So contact your state legislators, the Department of Education, let them know that we're here, not with money, but we're here with lots of advice and help, and we are always willing to provide that advice and help.
Thanks for being on the show, John.
You're welcome. Thanks very much. It was a pleasure.
All right, Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. I created a new resource for you called The 3 Leadership Questions I Ask Every Day. You can download the resource by visiting betterleadersbetterschools.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. This helps me in a few ways. It gives the show some social proof, it encourages new people to listen to the show, and it improves the ranking of the show and therefore helps me serve more school leaders. If you want extra credit and some good vibes, share your biggest takeaway from the show and tag me on Twitter and Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer, and make sure to use the hashtag BLBS. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Join over 3,000 school leaders that get this resource delivered every week. In the weekend resource, I share content curated specifically for school leaders. You'll get articles, videos, templates and exercises, coaching tips, inspirational quotes, invitations to free Friday group coaching, which is an exclusive offer made available only to newsletter subscribers in the Better Leaders, Better Schools tribe, and links to all the content I created for you this past week. You can subscribe at betterleadersbetterschools.com/weekend-resource. And remember, life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader.